a fascinating Aliyah here with a lot of significance for our history. And we should have, one would think, we should have tremendous gratitude to Eliezer for what happens in this Aliyah. This is the very successful mission that he has that brings about our existence. Jewish people are very grateful to Eliezer, or should be very grateful to Eliezer, for carrying out the mission that Avram gave him to find a shidduch for Yitzchak. And it looks like he did so with tremendous creativity and accomplishment. And we should be very grateful, one would think. And yet, we find that Chazal are critical of him in ways that are surprising, in ways that require a little bit of explanation. And you had a chance to see this morning, if you looked at the Makaros, some of these statements in Chazal that are critical of Eliezer in ways that really require us to consider a little bit. So here, Eliezer, he's asked to find a shidduch for Yitzchak, and he knows that he should prioritize chesed. That he understands. Avram has told him that he doesn't want him to find a girl from where, around where they are. He should go back to where Avram's family is. And that itself is very interesting, by the way. It's itself something to consider, because we know that he didn't think the people from around where he was then were appropriate shidduchim. But if you recall, Avram's roots were themselves from Ovdei Avodah Zarah. So to send back to his own family would not seem to be something that is much of a better idea. He's going to find people who are idolatrous. Why was that better than the alternative? So there's a comment here of the Ran and his Rashos and Rebbeinu Bachya and a few others that note here that there is a difference between midos and theology and hashkafa. And here in hashkafa we mean in a very significant sense of being an Ovid Avodah Zarah or not, not just the nuanced differences in hashkafa. But nonetheless, there is a difference between them, and that, in a sense, when looking for a shidduch, midos has to be a bigger priority. And they emphasize that midos are more ingrained and come more from one's upbringing, while philosophy is something that can be changed, is something that can be taught. Now, it should emphasize that we believe midos can be changed as well, and that midos and their adaptation and their growth is a major part of why we exist, as the Vilna Gaon understood. So I don't want to overstate the distinction, but this is the way they understand it, that between the two, midos are more entrenched within one's character and are more a function of where one is brought up and the setting in which they are raised. And therefore, between the two, when looking for a shidduch, it's more important to focus on midos rather than to focus on theology. And it's evocative of a comment that Beis Halevi has, which is really, in essence, the Gemara, that goes back to Parshas Bereishis. That's not in the context of shidduchim there, but also in terms of what's the priority. And that the Torah tells us that when God created man, so he said, Na'asa Adam b'tzalmeinu k'dmuseinu, let us make man in the plural. And that's a very surprising line, because we only believe in one God. So who was he talking to when he said in the plural, Na'asa Adam? So the Gemara tells us that he was Namlech the Melachim, that he took counsel from the angels, in essence, because he was teaching us modesty. He was teaching us that it's a good midah to ask advice, to look for counsel. So this was quite a risk, because one could have read this pasuk and understood it to mean that Chalila, there are two gods. And in fact, the Gemara says in Megillah that when they did the Septuagint, when they translated the Torah into Greek, so this pasuk they actually changed, because they were afraid of how the Greeks would relate to that, that it would look like the Torah was saying there are two gods. So indeed, that's quite a risk. So the notion that the priority was to teach midos, to teach anivus, even at the cost that one might misread the pasuk and understand it to mean plural gods. It's again a statement that there is this higher priority put on midos than there is on even core fundamentals of hashgacha. So that's a very interesting idea, and that's how these Rishonim, the Rambam, the Rabbachi explain that Avram said, go back to my family to look for a shidduch. Now you might say, well, hold on a second, if we read the rest of this parsha, so it doesn't really sound like they were Bali Midos either. So that's clearly an important thing to account for and to figure out where that's going. There is a Sefer Ma'aris Yitzchak, it's written by somebody I'm acquainted with, by Idle Talk. So he has a lengthy discussion trying to account for that part, like how you could explain that the actions of Rivka's family were consistent with some perspective on Midos, even as they seem to be highly questionable. So in any event, so we know that he's looking for Midos, and he's looking for Chesed primarily. This is the Midos we read about last week. This is the Midah of Avraham Avinu. This is the primary characteristic that needs to be there in order to carry on his message to the next generation and to the whole future. Fine, so he's looking for a Bailas Chesed. So he sets up a test to see who will express themselves in a Chesedic way. And he formulates this test that whoever is going to come and give him water, and not just give him water, but also will give water to his camels as well. So that's going to be the girl. She's going to be the one. So Gavaldik, it worked out. It worked out exactly as he requested, exactly as he planned, and he found the perfect shidduch, and we are all the beneficiaries. Yet, the Gemara, in at least two places, seems to criticize him. So the Gemara Maseches Tainis and Daf Dalet tells us that Eliezer is an example of somebody's bikei shaloi kahagin, that he asked in an inappropriate way. And he's lucky that it worked out. And he's contrasted with somebody like Yiftach, who also made an inappropriate arrangement and wasn't so good. So he wasn't so lucky, and Eliezer was lucky.
The Gemara later on also negatively contrasts Yiftach to Avram Avinu, like that, you know, sort of comparing, I guess, Akedas Yitzchak and Akedas Benos Yiftach.
Yeah, without getting into the details of the Yiftach story, which has a lot to comment as well, but here, just the idea that Eliezer is put in this category is surprising. If you look at the Torah Tamimah here, so he comments that the focus is on tefillah, that it's a apparently, the Gemara is telling you that tefillah should really be focused and specific and not open to misinterpretations or nasty twist endings. But one gets the impression, really, it's talking about more, that he's basically making a condition that could have backfired on him. And that wasn't the wisest, even though it worked out.
Is loka hogan inappropriate, or is just flawed, and there's something wrong with it?
I don't know if there's a difference. Would you?
I'm saying his intent.
His intent was all.
It didn't
intent.
Make sense.
Well, it made sense. It was risky. I think the point is it was risky. You know, that it could have backfired. That's what the Gemara basically says. That, you know, he had a good idea, but maybe Yiftach had a good idea also, but it wasn't careful to account for how it could go wrong.
Sort of like like this is kind of thing with, you know, like a genie. You know, the thing with like genies, you have to be very specific.
Well, that's the thing, right?
How you word it, because you're going to say, I want $1 million, and, you know, the genie is going to twist your word in a way.
Right, that's what I was thinking about, the nasty twist endings, that, you know, that basically, you know, you have to be very careful not to allow any room for, but it's interesting, because why would that be necessarily an issue with a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Yeah, I sometimes think that that's the pshat, the Gemara says in Brachos, that when Chana successfully prayed for a child, and she got Shmuel, so the Gemara has that very surprising line that she davka asked for an average child, that she wanted one who wasn't too smart and not smart, and not too this, not too that, somebody in the Zara Nashim. So why did she want davka that? So a lot of comments as to what exactly that Gemara is getting at. I thought one possible interpretation is maybe along these lines, like you're talking about, like she didn't want something that was, she didn't want to express her tefillah in a way that could backfire. Like when you get very specific, okay, I want it to be very smart, then he turns out to be an evil genius. You know, that's not what I want. So basically what she's saying is I want, you know, a fair shot like everyone else. She should have an average chance. Not that I don't want to say anything that can be interpreted in a way that could backfire. I want the same clean slate that everyone else has coming into the world, and they could be good or bad. So I'll ask for it that way and not to say anything that could end up backfiring, end up having that kind of an effect. So whether this was about tefillah or whether this was about the condition that was maybe not completely prudent. So the Gemara has this statement. And then the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Tzadi Hei, has a statement which maybe is even more surprising than this. And there the Gemara associates Eliezer's activity with a prohibition in the Torah called Nechush in Parsha Shoftim. So we find that the Torah gives us a cluster of prohibitions that are about Avodah Zarah. And among them, so we have a prohibition of Lo Senachishu. So what does Lo Senachishu mean? So in modern Hebrew, Lenachesh means to guess. But in the usage here, in the Torah and in the Gemara, it means essentially superstitious behavior. That if you're going to make your decisions hang on some kind of a meaningless sign. So if you say that I want to know if I should sell my stock or buy more stocks, so I'll look outside. If the red car passes first, I'll sell. If a blue car passes first, I'll buy. So that's considered to be nechush. It's no relevance between what car passes you first and what you should do with your stocks. So therefore, that is prohibited. That's not the kind of behavior that we're supposed to do. So the Gemara says that, you know, the Gemara Nechulin says that kol nechush she'eno keliezer eved Avraham eino nechush. Again, the Gemara also has another story from Tanakh. We won't focus on that one now. But on this one specifically, because it's what we're dealing with here, the Gemara seems to associate Eliezer's behavior with the prohibition of Nechush. Now, this is surprising for two reasons. The biggest reason that it surprises us is that you wouldn't think that this is anything connected with Nechush, that we make decisions based on factors all the time. The question is just, the factor rationally connected, or is it not rationally connected? So if it's rationally connected, so then that's fine. So what's wrong with that? So here he's looking for a person of chesed, so he sets up a test based on chesed. So why is that so terrible? That makes a lot of sense. How is that nechush? That's one glaring issue. The other issue is maybe more technical that prompts much discussion, is that essentially it's an accusation of halachic misbehavior on the part of Eliezer. And the assumption is that he would not have done something halachically wrong. Now, I have to figure that out a little bit, because first of all, Eliezer was not technically Jewish, so should he be bound by halachic standards itself, a discussion. There is a position that Bnei Noach are also prohibited in Kishuv and its related Yisurim, so that might be the basis for the issue. Or also, there is the basic presumption that Eliezer adhered to the standards of his master Avram, and therefore would have anyway been expected to maintain halachic standards. It's interesting, because in the later literature it goes much further, that there is a discussion you can find, especially if you look in the Sfarim. It's a very popular genre nowadays, the Sfarim that have halachic discussions of topics that come out of the Parsha. So one of the major themes you'll find in this week's Parsha, in many Sfarim, is the question, first of all, what exactly was Eliezer's job? Was he a shadchan, or was he a shliach l'kiddushin? Was it his job to find the right girl, or to effect the kiddushin, to carry out the kiddushin on behalf of Yitzchak? So the assumption is that if he was a shliach l'kiddusha, so then there are many halachos that perhaps can be derived or considered from looking at details of the story. So The assumption seems to be that he was a halachic expert, that he was carrying out this whole mission in a way that was correct and instructive to us as far as details that affect how shlichus, the kedushin, should work. There's a lot to say about that, maybe for a different year, some of it affects other aliyahs, but it's very interesting. So there is this working presumption that Eliezer would not have committed averos, and in fact maybe would have been a Rebbe in some sense to us as far as deriving halachos. So that's the other issue that Rishonim struggle with, that how could it be that Eliezer is accused of nechesh here? Two questions. One, it doesn't sound like nechesh, and two, it doesn't sound like Eliezer would have committed such an aver. So the Rishonim deal with this. You maybe got to see some of them. Tosfos over there, as a Ritva, as a Rav, and a lot of Rishonim talk about this, and it's Machlokas, the Rambam, and the Ravid in interpreting that Gemara, that many of the Rishonim say that the Gemara does not mean to accuse Eliezer of Nechush. So basically, to address that second question, that how could it be that Eliezer would violate the Savera? So there are a number of suggestions in Rishonim why it wasn't really a violation of Nechush in his specific case. Some point to the fact that he also was davening to God at the same time. He clearly wasn't looking for some kind of external force in the world. He was asking God specifically, and with a strong tefillah, to give him this, to give him this sign. That's the, we haven't actually looked at the psukim yet, but that was the opening language. We should actually maybe just look at it inside. Right? That the language he uses is one that's very non-nechishtik. And he says in the third pasuk here, "Vayomer Hashem Elokei Adoni Avram, Hakrin Elafana Hayom, Vase Chesed Im Adoni Avram. Please do a chesed for me, and have this all work out." So some highlight that to show that this certainly isn't some kind of a superstitious act because of its strong roots in emuna and prayer to God. So that's one issue that the Rishonim discuss, various ways to separate Eliezer from the Avera component. But still, what about the issue that it wouldn't even seem to be Nechush anyway? It's all rational. So here, some of the Rishonim emphasize that, yes, indeed, we have to kind of split things here. That Eliezer's specific test wouldn't have been Nechush anyway because it is rational and because it is relevant to what he was looking for. But it's indicative of a detail in Hilchos Nechush. You see there's a machlokas here between the Rambam and the Ravid. On this point, the Rambam identifies the behavior of Eliezer as symbolic of prohibited Nechush, and the Ravid gets very upset. He says he's confused here. He just thinks that because the Gemara used that language, it meant to say that Eliezer was himself in violation of Nechush. That's not what it means. It just means to use him as an instructive point. So some of the Rishonim understand that it means that in order to violate Nechush, you have to really be committed to this plan, be committed to this sign as your whole decision-making factor. But if it's not an absolute tliya, if you're not completely depending on this sign, it's just something you're talking about or looking at, but it's not the whole factor, and you're not totally dependent upon it, so then that wouldn't constitute nechush.
Is that? I think that's what the Ritva says, if I'm correct.
Like, yeah, and a number of Shonim have an approach like that.
My understanding is that the Ritva's whole set of issues, nechush is inherently self-justifying.
Its own factor, because you're completely dependent on that.
Yes, whereas he said Eliezer is like on some external simon that's outside of like this.
His case, the simon was rational, but to depend on a, so you have to have that kind of commitment that he had. But it happened to be that what he was committed to made it not nechush. But if somebody was committed to something irrelevant, so then that would indeed be nechush. This is a standard that you find, just to give one example, so there's a discussion in Poskim that there's a notion that exists that if you're choosing a wedding date, so it's preferable to get married in the first half of the month because the moon is getting bigger, called the Bemilui Halavana, and that has a nice message of inspiration to it. While the second half of the month, the moon is getting smaller, it's not as inspiring. So the tshuvas of Rabbi Huda Asad and others, they talk about, so let's say you have your whole wedding scheduled, and then you find out about this idea. You scheduled it for the second half of the month, and then somebody tells you, oh, it's better to do the first half of the month. So now you're going to have to lose your deposit, and you're going to have to send out the new invitations, and your kala isn't too happy about it, so you're going to have to find a different kala, and you're going to have to totally turn everything upside down just to fit the standard of getting married in the first half of the month. So the Yehudiyahu says that not only is that not what you need to do, but it would be also to do that. He said that would be nechush, to think that this is what's going to make or break the happiness of your marriage, and that you have to prioritize that over everything else. So then that becomes nechush. You think that this is the defining aspect of what makes things happen in the world. It's supposed to be a nice inspiration. So if it works out with everything else, okay, so then that's on my list, something that helps focus you in a positive way. But to think that's what makes it happen, so that would constitute nechush. Hi.
I feel like this is maybe slightly off topic, but in that vein, how could I ever do like Rosh Hashanah Simanim?
So that's a huge topic. So that's a very important to appreciate and to understand that the Gemara talks about that in Daphne's contrast, that the Simanim on Rosh Hashanah night are not meant, and this is very important to, I actually spoke about this in Shul Rosh Hashanah night, so people should know when they go home, they should know what they're doing. This is very important that the Gemara calls that Simana Milsa, which is a different kind of idea, that no one should think that if I have an apple with honey, that will give me a sweet year. And if I don't, I will not. That the potential for my year to be sweet is because I either did or didn't eat an apple with honey. That's not what it's about. It's that on Rosh Hashanah, you are davening for having a sweet year and everything else the Simanim talk about. So your tefillah is always a little more focused and stronger when you have something to look at or something to experience that's going to focus your attention. So we try to inspire ourselves and try to say Hiratzon at that time during dinner on Rosh Hashanah night with that in mind, that as we are focused on the Yom HaDin and we believe that our tefillah can make a difference, so we want our tefillah to be focused and specific. And these various things that help us formulate our thoughts and concentrate on one idea that is going to uplift us. But that's very crucial to understand, so it's actually not off topic, it's very much on topic, that's exactly the point here, that we should understand what it is and what it isn't. So no one should think that, okay, this is all going to depend. Will I have a good year or not? It's all going to depend if I have an apple with honey. It's not about that. It's that feeling, focusing on that sweetness will help the, when you say Yehi Ratzon now, the Sheva Shana Mesukah, that the tefillah should be enhanced by the fact that you have a sensory experience that will connect you more. Al?
So, the action that Eliezer is looking for is something rational to try to find a good wife, but he also says that should be the one that you chose to Hashem.
Right.
That seems to push it a little bit beyond. It's not just saying this is something good to look for and that might make a good wife. It's saying but when I see this, I'll know that that's what you chose. Could that possibly be an issue?
So it's good and it's bad. You know, in some ways, that it's good because, again, like some of the Rishonim point out, that it emphasizes that he's not looking to some kind of external statement of the universe, but he's looking specifically for God. So the idea that he roots it in Emunah is a plus. But it may be, in the sense, the Gemara and Tainus of Pike Shloka Hogan, kind of forcing your deals on God has its own negativity to it. You know, so the assumption, and this is also a pitfall, the idea that you can impose a understanding and a framework and assume that God is following it, and that, okay, this is the sign I'm looking for, so, all right, we have a deal here, you're going to give me that sign. Maybe Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't agree, so maybe you're reading it wrong. So probably has elements of both. When the Gemara talks about Pika Shloka Hogan, it could also be focusing on that, on this assumption that God is going to agree to play by your rules. On the other hand, the fact that he's focused on God is a major redeeming factor here. So, in any event, so this is how many of the Rishonim understand, really against the Rambam, that it doesn't mean to accuse Eliezer of Nechush. It means to say that this is just an example of the commitment that one would need to have in order to violate Nechush. But Eliezer himself, no problem, he's fine. So it still leaves you a little baffled, because this is the Hakaras HaTov that we have for him, that here he pulls off the successful mission that we all owe our existence to, and he's the poster boy for the Avera, even if he wasn't himself guilty. But whenever we teach this Avera, we're like, oh, don't be like him. You know, that's not really very uplifting. That's not really a covet, one would imagine. You know, it's like doctors, they get the covet of having diseases named after them. So here Eliezer, he gets this Avera, identify with him. They didn't even violate the Avera, so what's the story with that? So I think we could perhaps understand here that maybe Eliezer did not violate Nechush in the technical sense. But there is still a shtickle of criticism that he deserves on some level to be associated with the Avera, because what he did still wasn't perfect. So what was the problem? Again, he's looking for Chesed, and he succeeds in finding a girl of Chesed through his test. So what's the problem? Why should that be at all criticized? So I think the issue here is that it's always a mistake to completely assume an absolute correlation between any action and a person's character. To assume I can look at any one event and decide based on that, that this is what the person is all about, that is always unwise. As a first step, maybe it was a very good idea that if he had formulated that, okay, I'm going to look around and see who's going to offer to give water to me and to the camels, so then that might have been very wise and prudent. And say, okay, if when this happens, I'll look into them further, and then I'll ask some questions, and I'll investigate a little bit more and see if this is a consistent pattern. So, and again, this is all, even if we acknowledge that, let's say, Chesed was the only thing he should care about, right? Let's even set aside other questions, if there should be other midos. But even if all he had to look for was Chesed, still to assume that any one action is completely representational of a certain character trait is not wise, because it could be that maybe she was a great Baal's Chesed, and for whatever reason she didn't do this particular act. Or maybe she did this act, but in the rest of her life, she's not so nice, and she happens to be particularly focused on this. So yes, it's very likely that there's a strong correlation between doing this and being a person of Chesed, but to believe that it's 100% connected and correlated, that's very unwise. And a lot, if you think about it, a lot of the problems that we have in human interactions are based on that kind of thinking. Say, if he was really a nice guy, he'd do this. Oh, if she really loved me, she'd do that. And it's possible he's a nice guy and for no reason doesn't do that. Or it's possible that people do that who aren't nice, and just the correlation is, it's significant, but it's not absolute. And this is what they call nowadays the fundamental attribution error. It's usually invoked in the context of a disparity between how you view yourself and how you view others. But here, just to focus on the how you view others part is the relevant part. So sometimes, let's say you see somebody cut in line. You say, oh, clearly he's a jerk, he cut in line. But you just cut in line this morning? Yeah, but I was in a rush, and I was having a bad day, and there was something going on. So when I did it, it's because the circumstance doesn't really define me. But when you do it, that defines you. So that's a difference between how you see yourself and how you see others. But here, just to focus on how you see others, the idea that you can assume that any one episode that you're looking at is completely defining the person's character is a mistake, and it leads to a lot of problems. And one could suggest that that's one of the reasons the Torah prohibits Lashon Hara. And the question is always asked, why does the Torah prohibit you from relating things that are true, even if they're negative, but they're true, what's the big deal? So among many explanations we can give, one reason very possibly is that we have this tendency to interpret every action as completely defining a person, and therefore we're essentially going to overread whatever we hear. So I tell you that the person did X, Y, Z, and you're going to hear, oh, that means he is X, Y, Z. And it's very possible that that's not a appropriate interpretation. And I would emphasize that, especially this is here in the context of Shiduchim, so this is a mistake people very often make in the context of deciding marriage and dates, that they have whatever tests that they set up or whatever interpretations or whatever advice they're getting, which is very often premised on, oh, they did this, they're that. They didn't do this, they're not that. It's all this assumption that you can impose a certain interpretation on activities and what they say about somebody. And of course, they're a part of the puzzle. But what we're talking about here is being so sure that the connection is absolute between what you see and what this person is about. That is dangerous. It's very often not true, l'kula and l'chumra. And perhaps that's what Eliezer did that deserves him being the poster boy for the Aveira. It wasn't actually Nechush, but it had something in common with Nechush. It had a certain irrationality to it, despite its rationality. That yes, it was relevant, but it's not true that they're absolutely correlated 100%, and that you could rely on it so carefully. Hi, sorry.
Can we assume that the entire interaction between Eliezer and Rivka was recorded in the Torah?
Not, well, it's interesting, it's actually recorded twice, right? Because he then tells over the whole story in detail. Yeah, they actually could be. And if you look at some of the Mefarshim, so they suggest that both the... We're working off two assumptions here, which are both questionable. One assumption that he was only testing for chesed and not for other things. And that this was the absolute way in which he was determining it. So one could quibble with both points. And if you look at various commentaries, you will find objections to either or both of these points, but certainly from the Gemara it does sound that way, and from the Psukim it largely sounds that way. So it's a reasonable interpretation, but you're right to question, are those two rock-solid assumptions? Not necessarily, they're both questionable, but they do seem to be the most likely reading both of the Psukim and the Gemaras especially. Hi.
How did the Rishonim understand the Gemara, the ones that go against how the Rambam understands it?
So again, there's two halves of the question, right? Because Rambam sounds like Eliezer, he was violating Nechush. So one half of the question is just, how could we blame Eliezer for Nechush? Wasn't he observant of either because he followed Avram or because Bnei Noach were also prohibited, and shouldn't we assume he wouldn't violate Nechush? So some are just addressing that and saying, well, his wasn't Nechush either because of the faith in God or because of other such things. But the question of just whether or not he was a tzaddik, but what about the fact it doesn't sound like Nechush? It's relevant. So that, some of the Rishonim say that, yeah, that kind of thing would have been okay. It's that we're just focusing on the fact that he was committed to it absolutely. As a defining factor of, to violate Nechush, you need that clause. So we're suggesting here that even if we say, okay, so it wasn't Nechush because it was rational, but there's an irrational aspect of it, that to assume that your correlation is perfect, that's irrational. To assume that it's very important information and a great first step, you know, so in a real life situation, if you were dating and you saw something like this, or you had something like this, so you'd say, okay, so this is somebody I want to know more about. This is somebody who very likely is worth considering very strongly. And then you'll look for more indications and you'll look to see whether it really holds up. And that will be a hugely relevant piece of information. But to say it is the whole thing. So that's where this problem was. And one could note that, yes, it's a problem in dating, but it's also a problem in all our interactions. And it's a problem whenever we think that, okay, this is what a nice guy does, this is what somebody who cares does, this is what an honest person does. And maybe I'm not right. Maybe my assumption that there is a perfect definition here is lacking in some way. And I think if you think about it, a lot of the fights that we have, a lot of arguments and human negative interactions can be tied to that. And maybe that's why Lashon Hara prohibits that kind of behavior. Now, that being said, so then we could ask, all right, so yeah, Taka. So then maybe he does deserve a little criticism. So why did it work out? So why was it that it was such a spectacular success? So here we could add something that Rav Soloveitchik talked about, that I mentioned the other week. The book Abraham's Journey was published after the Rav passed away. So there he discusses this incident at length, and he notes the extreme nature of it, that, and this is something that you see many comments about, that when here she's not just giving water, right, but she's doing the extreme physical labor and extreme exertion of feeding 10 camels, which takes many, many trips. And some also point out, why dafka the camels? What about the people? Eliezer had people also with him. So why didn't he put that into the test? So some respond to that, that was just easier. So she could have given to the people also, but it's much greater labor for her to give to the animals. But one of the points that Rav Soloveitchik emphasized is that there's a difference between people who are polite and people who are genuinely kind in their nature. So a polite person will say, yeah, come in, you'd like a drink, and your animals want any drinks, whatever it is. But here, this behavior was dafka way over the top. That this was a person who had genuine kindness and a commitment to chesed that transcended what was going on. And there are a number of details you could point to. He points to the fact that Eliezer said, you know, pour the water into my mouth. It was like a very strange thing to say. It was the kind of thing that the average person would find off-putting. And if you're just being polite, then you start to think, okay, this is not somebody I really want to hang out with so much. But if you're somebody who's genuinely kind, and you're not going to focus on whether the other person is acting in a normal fashion, so then you're able to respond even to that. Some others far and point out that since indeed there were people there that Eliezer had with him, maybe he had a minion with him, as some point out, the 10 camels, the 10 men. So it's also a little strange. So here, she's got to do all this work, and she's however old she was, okay, without getting into that discussion. But here, this little girl is making all these trips. What about these 10 men? Are they going to help at all with all this? And they're just going to stand around? So the extraordinary nature of what she was doing was very, very noteworthy. And maybe that was the point, that the shidduch for the family of Avram needed somebody who didn't just act politely and didn't just know how to respond under normal circumstances, but somebody who had kindness to such an extraordinary degree that she's able to overcome all of these other discouragements that a normal person, even a normal polite person, wouldn't be able to deal with. And that was dafka what he's looking for. He wasn't looking just for the average nice person. He was looking for somebody who was so defined by chesed in a absolute way that it could transcend all of these other details that would have been off-putting. And so maybe in Achanami, in the case of this one situation, for him to be so focused on this particular expression, maybe for this circumstance, maybe it had more sense to it than we otherwise could have thought. So, in the interest of time, we'll read all the Pesukim inside. I'll just mention a few points that you can see from the rest of the Aliyah, just to call attention to, some of which are related to this, and some of which are additional points. So, first of all, one other detail that also goes to deriving halachos from here. So, whether it's focusing on what Eliezer asked for, or focusing on what Rivka did, so some point out that we know we have a halacha that you're supposed to actually feed animals before people. That's what the Gemara says in Gittin and Brachos elsewhere, that you're supposed to feed your animals before you feed yourself. So here we find that Rivka gives the water to the people first and then to the camels. So isn't that a violation of that din? So again, we're assuming a very careful adherence to halacha here. So the Magen Avraham quotes from the Sefer Chassidim that only applies to food, doesn't apply to water. So therefore, for her to give water to the people before the camels, that's acceptable, and that's what we can understand from here. So that's an interesting idea. Ritzvi Pesach Frank has a tshuva in which he explains why that should be. So if that's true, a halacha, that it only applies to food, this din you feed the animals first, but doesn't apply to water, why should that be? So one approach you could say is just that water is more of an urgent need. So when you're dealing with something that could really affect one's ability to stay standing, so then human beings come before animals. But when it comes to food, food that can usually wait, So then that's when you should give the animals first. That point actually is why some are masig on this Sefer Chassidim, and one say, well, actually that was the point, that he looked like he was going to collapse. So it was basically a pikuach nefesh kind of thing. It's not actually relevant to any general situation because this was an exception, because he really looked like he may faint without water, so therefore she had to first give the water to Eliezer. And this din basically was pushed away by the pikuach nefesh nature of it, so maybe it's not even relevant. But here what Ritzi Pesach is saying is that that's always the case, that water is always going to be something that's more urgent, and therefore we would never say prioritize the animals in getting water. We would say it in terms of the meal. That's where you can focus on them first. The other explanation he gives is that it could be that the issue of the reason you should feed the animals first is because we're afraid that if you get involved in your meal, so then you may end up forgetting to feed the animals and they'll go hungry. So make sure to feed them first and have your meal afterwards. But a drink doesn't have, it's like we find in other areas of halacha, when you're not supposed to eat because of an impending mitzvah, so we often do allow you to drink water. So therefore, maybe that's the issue and you don't have that concern. The Ksav Sofer quotes from his father, the Chassam Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer indeed says like this in his Sefer and Chumash, that no, the reason here is because the whole concept only applies when you're feeding yourself, that if you are going to eat your meal, so you should make sure to feed your animals before you eat yourself. But if you're feeding somebody else, so you don't have to worry about their animals before you worry them, if you want to offer somebody a drink, so then you can offer that person a drink. It's not necessarily your responsibility to worry about their animals first. So that's the distinction here. And it doesn't necessarily have to do with any general halacha about how one carries about his own decisions. Just to mention a few other points, a nice sefer on essays on Chumash called Uri V'Yishi, where he discusses just the symbolic relevance of camels here as a part of the story. He notes that the whole language of Gemilus Chasadim and how to understand that is that the language suggests a reciprocal relationship, that you help others and that they help you, and that we have a lashon of Hayshavtalo Gemulo Barosho, that you have given that which you owe the person, and Chayshinim Lagomlim, various languages that you find in Shas that suggest that it represents a kind of reciprocity, and that maybe the lashon of Gamal, in a sense, is meant to evoke that, but also camels by their nature, camels are able to be independent and to be filled up with water and to last for a long time on that water. And that's also symbolic of the way to try to help people with chesed, and that maybe there's a whole symbolism here specifically of the camel. Water is also symbolic. We find the Medrash emphasizes here that many successful Jewish shiduchim have happened by the wells, so Rivka and Yaakov and Moshe Rabbeinu, all of that all happened by wells. So it's interesting symbolism. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was quoted, he gave a speech at the Shabbat Brachos, at the wedding of his granddaughter, and her husband wrote the Sefer Chamudei Yitzchak, so he quotes what his wife's grandfather Rav Shlomo Zalman said. They said that it's to show that the shidduch is directly from God, and water represents the one human need that doesn't have any human involvement necessary. And it's not like bread, which has to be manufactured. It's just pure the way it is. So therefore, water is a way of saying that the shidduch is directly from God. And he suggests also that when the Gemara says at the beginning of Sota that God is involved in shidduchim and compares it to Kriyas Yamsuf, that Kashal is Avkan Kriyas Yamsuf. So what's the connection, and what does it mean? It's hard for God. Nothing is hard for God. So he has a discussion there that Nisim, when God does Nisim, so often we want it to be kind of hidden in nature so that it looks natural. But Kriyas Yamsuf was difficult because it was so dramatic. It's hard to make it look natural. And so too, Shiduchim also, that really they are very much dependent on God's direct control, but they are hidden some degree among nature, that people seem to be playing a role, but really it's all from God in the same sense as Kriyas Yamsuf, and that's what this is all meant to represent. Okay, just a few other quick points along these lines. Also, to talk about Rivka, so the Torah says, she acted quickly, and that also shows a certain type of zrizus. Some of the Svarim point out that the zrizus is really just here to emphasize that it was a mida, that this was a part of her character, and that's what he was looking for, and that's something that is being highlighted. There's also here, there's a sicha by Rav Ruderman, the original Rosh Hashiva of Neri Yisrael, and the sichos that were published. This is basically three big attributes you can see from Rivka in this episode. Chesed for sure, but also Zrizus, and also Derech Eretz, the fact that she refers to Eliezer as Adoni, that's there to show the importance of Derech Eretz, and that's a very major thing. Also, the pasuk goes on to say, Va'ish Mishtoya, that he was basically kind of stunned watching this and trying to see still how it would turn out, trying to see if she'd pass the test. So, the Sefer Yad Binyamin, he quotes Chaim Knievsky, who addressed the question that, okay, well, she's already expressed that she's willing to do this, so she already passed the test. So, he has an interesting interpretation that part of the test was you had to see if the camels would actually drink the water. Why was that relevant? That's an interesting point. It's because maybe she was a balas chesed, but maybe she didn't care about gezel. Maybe she was stealing somebody else's water. And that would have been a deal breaker. Which is also especially relevant b'zman hazeh, because it's like a whole kind of a Robin Hood syndrome, right? For a person to think, okay, I'm a bal chesed, but I'll do it in a way that means I don't have to care about anybody else's rights because I'm so convinced of my own giving nature that it doesn't matter what anyone else needs, so, or what anyone else's rights are. So maybe she didn't care about Gezel, so she had to wait. He wanted to wait to see if the camels would drink. Now, why is that a clue of anything? Because if you learn the first Parak Echulin, 2 years ago we learned the first Parak Echulin, so the Gemara has a discussion there that's based on the premise that tzaddikim are protected from mistakenly doing averos, and even their animals, afilu behemten shel tzaddikim. So the assumption is that Avram's camels wouldn't even unknowingly take from gezel. So that's an interesting premise. So that's the premise here. Now, indeed, that question was raised at the beginning of the Aliyah. There's some who say that Rashi tells us in the very beginning of the Aliyah that you could tell who Avram's camels were because they were muzzled, that he was so careful not to have them grazed from other people's property. So his camels were muzzled, so they shouldn't come to do that, and that's how you knew his camels looked different than everybody else's camels. So it sounds like it wasn't such a given that they wouldn't take from other people's property. So that's a question some talk about. One of those who talk about that is the Lutzker Rav, who's Naim LaTorah. In the beginning of the Aliyah, he raises that issue. How come we didn't have just the premise of Behemten Shul Tzadikim wouldn't take from Gezel anyway? So he says, first of all, Avram's not going to rely on that. He's not going to assume that he's a tzaddik and therefore he's protected from that. But also, right, more to the point, he says they wanted to make a statement that we, our animals don't steal, and therefore you could see that they're muzzled. And that makes a statement for the public. Whether or not the animals themselves would have somehow been spiritually protected, that's secondary to the fact that he had a active policy of making sure that they didn't steal. And we'll just comment here at the end of the Aliyah. So he, Eliezer, once he decides she's the one, so he gives the jewelry, he gives the various items that he had brought, and Rashi there says that they are meant to evoke the Machtzis HaShekel and the Luchos. So just in terms of what the symbolism is, so the Maral understands that his message was, okay, I see you're Balas Chesed, that's great. Now just so you know, you're marrying into the Jewish people, and we have three pillars. We have Chesed and also Torah, the Luchos, and Avoda, the Machtzis HaShekel towards the Avoda. And the Shem Shmuel, he takes that further, and he says, but it's also to emphasize the core role of Chesed, that the Chesed is necessary for the other two also. So the Machtzis HaShekel is the whole idea of the half, because you need everybody else. And the Luchos that were given to Klal Yisrael, Kalev Echad V'Yishechad, when they were all as one entity, so that also had to be emphasized. And just to add one more point, So the Sefer Bar Yosef talks also about the symbolism here. So the Torah emphasized that they're tzmudos, that they clung closely, that they were tight, so to speak. So that is supposed to also be relevant to the luchos. So he notes that the idea of the two luchos, that we understand that one of the tablets is ben adam l'makom and the other is ben adam l'chavero, but they also have to always be tightly together, that we can't separate them and they can't be bifurcated. So here also, so okay, you're a Baal Chesed, that's great, that's our first priority, but you should also understand the whole picture of Torah, Avodah, and Gnos Chasadim, and also of the inseparable nature of ben adam l'makom and ben adam l'chavero, and that that's a big part of the message here. So all of that hopefully should be uplifting and inspiring for us as we go towards Shabbos, and I think also about the Chag HaSmicha celebration on Sunday that we'll all at least sense and keep, well, I'll let you know what time Shir will be sometime earlier in the day, but God willing we'll have Shir then, but so the celebrations of Chag HaSmicha continue the Shabbos also in Tinek for those who are there, and I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos, should be all the good things, should be healthy and strong and inspiring, and I look forward to seeing you on Sunday. We have a